This is Medicine Matters, the Springer Medicine Podcast. I'm Jazz Healy, the Cardiology and Infectious Disease Content Manager for Springer Medicine. When thinking about cardiovascular risk factors, environmental pollutants such as light, noise, and plastic are probably not the first thing to come to mind. However, 1 in 5 cardiovascular-related deaths worldwide are attributed to environmental exposures. Air pollution is perhaps the most prominent example, with the World Health Organization reporting that a staggering 99% of the global population breathe air that exceed recommended limits. This episode, we'll be taking a look at the impact of air pollution on cardiovascular disease and what can be done to reduce the risk. Joining me is Dr. Anusha Sanivaratne, an immunologist specialising in cardiovascular disease from Royal Holloway, University of London, and founder of Girawa, an international planetary health education project for youth in global south countries. Dr. Sanivaratne, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you, Jess, and it's a pleasure to be here.
To start us off, what sort of impact does air pollution have on cardiovascular disease?
Air pollution has been sort of known as a threat to cardiovascular disease for many decades. A lot of the studies so far have focused on the epidemiological associations between high levels of air pollution and cardiovascular conditions, things like coronary artery disease, heart failure, cardiac arrhythmias as well. So most of the studies so far have shown a positive association between higher levels of air pollution and cardiovascular disease. It's only really in recent years we're starting to see more studies that are trying to understand the mechanisms behind this, because it's not so well understood at the moment. A lot of the studies are focused on particulate pollution, so that's the solid and liquid particles that are present floating in the air, partly because it's easier to study, but also because a lot of the epidemiology studies have shown a more consistent link between particulates and cardiovascular disease. But there is also some links in terms of how the gases in the atmosphere, things like nitrogen dioxide, sulfur dioxide, etc., can affect cardiovascular risk as well. So there's a big association between air pollution and cardiovascular disease, but we're still really trying to understand the mechanisms behind it.
I imagine due to the number of known air pollutants that the scope for potential mechanisms is quite broad. You mentioned that particulate matter has been the focus of most studies. What do we know of its biological interactions?
Yeah, so a lot of it also depends on the composition of the particulates as well. So it does appear, for instance, particles like diesel exhaust particles, they have a certain coating of chemicals on the outside of these particles that can cause chemical changes within our body. So the biggest link is with oxidative stress. So it seems like the chemicals in diesel particles seems to increase oxidative stress when particles can enter our bodies. I should also mention that the thinking behind how particulate matter can affect health in general is that the smaller the particles are, the deeper they can penetrate into the body. So the smallest particles are believed to be able to penetrate into the bloodstream. They'll be able to breach the lung alveolar barrier and get into the bloodstream and then penetrate into the arteries and so on and potentially cause damage to the vasculature. So in terms of how oxidative stress happens, it's most likely those chemical changes are causing the release of these oxygen-free radicals, and then potentially that may be leading to oxidation of lipids that are circulating in our bloodstream. And of course, then we know that the accumulation of these lipids in the arteries can start the process of atherosclerosis, which is the formation of these fat-rich inflammatory plaques in our arteries, which can then lead to heart attacks and strokes. And so that's at least one example of how these particulates can increase disease.
What of gaseous pollutants? What do we know about their interactions?
At the moment, in terms of the gaseous elements, there is some links to increased inflammation, particularly around the gases like nitrogen dioxide and sulfur dioxide. Again, there seems to be a link with oxidative stress, which could also then lead to the increased of oxidation of the lipids and so on. But again, as I said, it's not as well studied areas, particulate pollution, so I think a lot more work needs to be done in that area.
So pollutants are seldom encountered individually. They're often experienced in tandem with other sources. For instance, particulate matter from traffic could be associated with the noise and light exposure from the vehicles, or vehicle fumes being composed of different pollutants. Does this sort of interplay complicate the research in identifying the risky pollutants?
Yeah, that's a really good question, actually, because we're all exposed to so many different things, so many lifestyle factors as well. The way we live our lives, you know, can cause a lot of stress, you know, things like you mentioned earlier, things like noise, light pollution. These can all affect our sleep, circadian cycles, for instance, and that can have an impact on stress and therefore affect our levels of cardiovascular disease. But also, as you say, you know, pollution, we're not exposed to one particular particulate. We're exposed to so many different things, and that of course does make it challenging to understand what exactly is causing health issues. So of course a lot of studies do tend to focus on one pollutant at a time to try and tease out which ones exactly are proving most dangerous in terms of our disease risk. As I said, diesel particles are one of those examples that's been shown to increase the risk of hypertension, cardiovascular disease, etc. You may be aware of more recent studies looking at microplastics. There was a study 2 years ago now that showed microplastics actually lodged inside the arterial plaques of patients who had those plaques removed. And the presence of those microparticles of microplastics actually correlated with an increased risk of stroke as well. So that we have some ideas in terms of, you know, which particles are most dangerous. But again, you know, until we sort of studied each one individually and then perhaps looked at combining some of them, most likely using animal models and so on, it's only then we can really understand which ones are most dangerous.
Certainly, it's a topic that is gaining recognition, but more work needs to be done. You mentioned earlier the epidemiological evidence of the association between air pollution and cardiovascular disease. Could you elaborate a bit more on what we have seen?
So far, of course, a lot of different studies have been done around the world, in the UK, in London, different urban environments, but also in, around Europe and Asia and other highly polluted areas. And in general, there's a link to higher risk of hypertension, which, of course, is a major cardiovascular risk factor. And then, of course, there have been links, as I mentioned earlier, to coronary artery disease, cardiac arrest, heart failures, peripheral artery disease as well. So that's normally affects the legs and therefore perhaps causes ischemia in the legs. And cardiac arrhythmias as well have all been linked to air pollution. And of course, we do tend to see more air pollution in urban environments. So, you know, we're more likely to see these health effects in the cities. And we're also seeing, as you know, more developed countries start to improve their air quality, of course, low and middle income countries are also developing, and that means they're starting to use more combustion vehicles. They're not obviously making that transition to some zero or low emission transport and energy use as quickly. So that means the pollution impacts are starting to shift more towards the global south, particularly areas, for instance, like South Asia or Eastern Europe and so on. Also, depending on the geographical context as well, some areas, for instance, you have accumulations of air pollution where they're surrounded by mountains or hills. And then obviously, you know, that air pollution gets sort of trapped in the valleys, and those sorts of locations also see higher levels of pollution. Again, we're seeing sort of worse health effects as a result. So that gives an indication of what's happening epidemiologically.
The types of exposure is something that differs quite substantially depending on socioeconomic factors. High-income countries may see more vehicular traffic in their cities, whereas lower middle-income countries or rural areas would not. There are some societies that might be reliant on the burning of physical fuel in their homes for things such as warmth and cooking. Do cases differ depending on the type of exposure?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So there is, yeah, as you highlight, there are differences in lifestyle. So in urban environments, we would see more use of fossil fuel, combustion vehicles and so on causing pollution. But in, for example, rural areas, like you say, it's not necessarily those sort of urban sources of pollution. It's quite different. It's, as you say, cooking fuels, things like wood smoke becomes a problem. Sometimes in these homes, they're not well ventilated. So when they're sort of cooking and burning various fuels, some countries they still use coal, for instance, for their cooking. Some places they use firewood. So if they're not well ventilated, again, they're going to be exposed to the particles that are released from the smoke. Again, I think there needs to be more studies in these areas that things like cardiovascular disease haven't been well studied in relation to these pollutants. But one recent study that could perhaps give an indication of the impact on health is there was a study on Californian firefighters who are fighting the wildfires out there and obviously been exposed to the wood smoke particles. And in general, there seemed to be an increase in inflammation markers in their blood cells, and also genes related to allergies were also upregulated. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, once we study this further, what impact this is having on cardiovascular disease rates as well, because again, it's quite an understudied area.
Touching on your point regarding wildfires, the number of extreme weather events around the world are on the rise due to climate change. Do events like dust storms also have an impact on cardiovascular health?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, for sure, as I said, wildfires do have a similar impact. Dust storms, again, there's probably not so much research in that area, but that's something that's definitely worth looking into. But also, it's worth considering the impact of climate change itself. And, of course, we're seeing a greater frequency of extreme weather events. And things like extreme heat can also increase the impact of pollution on health, because normally, when you have hotter climates, especially in urban environments, the pollutants that are already in the air, they're more likely to oxidize due to the extreme heat. So you get the generation of more of these oxidative free radicals, which you could potentially inhale. And then, of course, the whole cascade of oxidative stress and then the other downstream events that lead to disease can happen as well. So obviously, climate change is a big concern in relation to how air pollution will impact our health in the future as well.
Moving on to interventions, what could be done in terms of policy as well as on the clinical and individual levels?
So, I mean, one thing obviously is we need to reduce our reliance on forms of combustion, so things like fossil fuels, combustion vehicles, and as I mentioned, we've seen a big risk in relation to diesel exhaust particles, so the sooner we can phase out diesel vehicles, the better. Obviously, we've seen things like low emission zones, ultra low emission zones in various cities around the UK, and they've already had a massive impact in terms of improving air quality in those cities. So it's really important to keep up that momentum. But I think ultimately, the main solution that we're all looking for is to sort of essentially restructure our transport infrastructure so that public transport is easier and more accessible for everyone to use, and we can use it to get it anywhere in the country or internationally as well. And also encourage more active forms of travel as well. So things like improve our cities so that people can walk and cycle more easily, which obviously will have health benefits in itself. And we really do need to reduce our reliance on cars, even though we are moving more towards electric cars, and that is an important solution in terms of reducing the amounts of pollution on our roads, and it's already been shown to have a positive effect in that way. Obviously, there are other pollutants that are sort of linked to electric cars that are of increasing concern, so things like brake abrasion dust could be an issue as we see more electric vehicles on the road because they're heavier, so it causes more friction on the tyres and generating tyre abrasion dust as well. So electric vehicles are not going to be the solution for everything. We really need to improve our public transport infrastructure as well. And yeah, as I said, promoting and encouraging more active forms of travel as well is going to really be beneficial in terms of tackling air pollution, but also climate change and population health too. And then, of course, these things are not going to happen overnight. It's going to take a long time to make these changes. So we do also need to think of more short-term mitigation measures to protect public health. So it could be things like advising people on how they can protect themselves when they're going outside. Perhaps go outside when we know air pollution levels are lower, perhaps avoiding rush hour traffic times, for instance. Using air purifiers at home, perhaps face masks if they know they're going into a highly polluted area. Sometimes indoor pollution is also a concern as well. So things like indoor dust, particles that we generate from our own cooking as well can be a concern. So opening windows, making sure our homes are well ventilated, vacuuming carpets often as well to reduce the generation of that indoor dust as well. And just generally just following a healthy lifestyle, as with anything, you know, a healthy diet, good levels of exercise, sleep and so on is always going to be beneficial in terms of helping to protect our own health from all of these different pollutants. And I should also mention, we need to make sure that everyone has access to green spaces as well. because that's, of course, really beneficial for health. Trees, plants themselves are really good at absorbing air pollutants, so that will also be really helpful in terms of cleaning up our air quality as well.
Air pollution and climate change are, of course, quite heated topics when it comes to policy implementation. How do you think these changes could be approached?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because obviously we've seen in recent years public opposition to implementation of low emission zones. We saw that, of course, quite high profile case in London with the ULEZ scheme coming in. There seemed to be a lot of misinformation around the implementation of it. People who thought they would have to buy new vehicles when actually they would have been perfectly fine under the ULEZ scheme. So obviously that indicates that we really need to make sure that there's clear messaging on these policy measures, that we minimise or completely cut out misinformation as much as possible. Obviously, that's really tough in the age of social media and so on. But we need to make sure that everyone has access to the right information, that education is really key priority when it comes to implementing these policy measures. That's often the most important factor, is ensuring that everyone is aware of the importance of these measures and all of those details in relation to that.
Finally, there is quite a lot more research needs to be done in the area. In terms of the future direction, do you think we should be focusing more on understanding the impact of individual pollutants, or should we perhaps start to look more at intervention and mitigation strategies?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of those things that we need to focus on. So, as you say, we need to really establish which pollutants are most dangerous so that we can prioritize what to target our sort of transport public health policy on in terms of reducing the dangers of those pollutants. Obviously, for instance, focusing on different types of particles coming from vehicles and so on, and understanding, you know, how severe the health effects are from those different types of particles. But there are also many different air pollutants that are emerging, as well as the chemical pollutants, for instance, that are emerging. And there's so much out there we probably still don't really know about, that we even know exist. So we need to understand what we're being exposed to. So obviously there is increasing research looking into microplastics, because that's a massive concern now. So much of the environment is contaminated with it. There's also the forever chemicals that they're often these plastics are treated with and could leach into the environment. Things like furniture are treated with these forever chemicals as flame retardants, for example. So again, we're seeing, you know, all sorts of different pollutants and chemicals that we're being exposed to, and we really need to understand the risk of those. And as I said, with electric vehicles, there's a concern around brake abrasion dust and tyre abrasion dust as well. So you want to understand, you know, while we're transitioning to this zero emission society, what sort of impact that's going to have on health. It's also, I think, really important to understand the biological mechanisms, because as I said, a lot of studies have so far have focused on the epidemiological links. We don't fully understand the biological mechanisms, for instance, what precise inflammatory pathways are being activated in response to pollution. And I think once we can understand that, it will help us to establish what the most appropriate mitigation measures are in order to protect public health. And particularly for those more vulnerable patients who perhaps these sort of mitigation measures are not enough, we also need to think about what clinical interventions would be beneficial for them. Are there sort of existing drugs out there that perhaps they're already taking that could provide some benefits, or are there some other potential therapies or markers of disease that we could use as an indication to help protect them in the future?
That's brilliant. Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Senavaratna.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for the invitation as well.
This podcast is intended for healthcare professionals for their ongoing medical education and entertainment. It should not replace the professional advice of a doctor or pharmacist, and may not be used as a basis for diagnosis or any change to the prescribed treatment of disease. The views expressed by our moderators and guests are their opinions and do not represent the position of any third parties. The information given in the podcast is subject to change as the scientific field and clinical advances progress.